This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
This is Bondi Tunes International broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I've got on the line from the UK, Paul Lim, who is a solo artist. Welcome to our broadcast.
Oh, hello.
You've had an interesting life, Paul. Let's talk about your past and also, you know, your father was a big influence on your life.
In terms of the fact that he got an Akai 4000 DS, which enabled you to sort of sound on sound, which is one of the earliest sort of portable things, I say portable, it's as big as a bag of potatoes, but it was, so I started twiddling around with just putting a guitar and then adding a bit to it, you know, before days of looping.
Yes, indeed. And you mentioned that you invented songs in your head. What age were you when you were doing that?
Well, when I was at junior school, I always used to sort of make little ditties up. I remember one about a crow in a tree. I wouldn't have been very old at all, about 7 or 8. And then my father took me to see a film, and the B-movie, which he used to get in those days, I think it was Spencer Davis, I'm not sure, but there's lots of early bands on. I don't think it was just Spencer Davis. And from that point on, I thought, oh, I really want to form a group, you know, and all the kids at school thought it was hilarious. nobody played an instrument, you know, it's the only instruments people played were people that were actually sort of taught piano and things. Nobody actually sort of had a guitar or anything in those days. It's hard to believe, but I didn't know anybody with a guitar at all.
You got you mentioned that you got your first summer job prior to art college, and you were allowed to buy a Watkins Rapier 22. What is that?
It's a guitar made in the UK. It was a bit like a Fender Stratocaster, but it was very budget. But having said that, I would kill for one of the flipping tremolo arms it had. It was a wonderful tremolo arm on it for a really cheap guitar, you know. In fact, Wilkinson had got quite a good reputation. That was okay. It was a bit battered up. It was from a second-hand shop. I don't know what you call them in Australia, but, you know, sort of a thrift store.
Mm. Yeah, so you also, your dad got an Akai 4000 DS. It sounds like you're very switched on technically in those days.
He was an i5 buff. He'd got a few friends who'd got really expensive i5 setups, and he used to buy their cast-offs. When they used to upgrade, he'd actually sort of buy whatever they were getting rid of. So we got an old Rogers amp, and then it progressed onto some decent speakers and stuff. And then he made some speakers that fit in the corner of the wall, which I've never seen anybody have since, which really was good for the neighbours with bass, you can imagine.
Yes, as the neighbours would have been really annoyed.
I think that's probably where his interest was. I mean, the Akai was for him, not for me. It was just me used to sort of, I used to sort of take it over every now and again and play around. So I'd be about, 11, 12, something like that by that time.
And you played in various bands over the years.
We're sort of on and off as bands are when you're sort of young, you know. I sort of played in, but mostly doing all his own stuff. And then we eventually ended up with a band called the Goat Captains, where we it was sort of doing the sort of futurist sort of movement, I suppose, and they're kind of Duran Duran and all that. And you know, we were playing, doing, getting gigs, getting crowds, doing our own stuff. But the closest we actually got to getting signed by a company was Sony, that wanted to give us a publishing deal. But it's probably as then as it is now, in that very often these companies will give you a publishing deal just so that they can claim you in case you do get famous.
I see. And you notice that, or at least I noticed from reading your bio, that family life took over for many years for you. So did you actually leave the music industry, or how did that work?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, it was up to the point where I think you got to the bit, you know, you sort of your mid to late 20s when you sort of think, not made it yet, can't see it happening. And then you meet somebody that, you know, you sort of seems more important than what you're doing at the time. And then, I mean, the music would never pay a mortgage, not yeah. then, and probably not now unless you're really successful. So it sort of took a back burner for many years, and I sold off a few bits and bobs, you know. But then sort of years later, it never leaves you, does it? When you sort of enjoy doing it and you enjoy writing songs like I always had, I thought, well, I'll start doing it again. So I've been in a few covers bands, but the covers band's not quite the same, is it? Because the audiences are always comparing you to something better.
Yeah, it's a tough game, isn't it? I mean, what percentage of people who are artists make it? You know, everyone's got another job.
Yes, and some of them have got more than one. I mean, I've got a couple of friends who actually have been really brave. One's a teacher that sort of just jacked his job in at the wrong time with this coronavirus to actually try and make a go of it full time. And he's got a family and he's got a mortgage, and I really don't know how he's going to cope. And I've got another friend that she does all sorts of music. She teaches a lot of choral work and puts choirs together, and she's in a sort of metal band as well. And she's really struggling because obviously there's no income coming in at the moment.
Yeah, that's tough going. You know, it reminds me of my own situation. I was a broadcaster, I was a newsreader in the 80s, in fact, over in England and Ireland. Of course, I'm in Australia, and when I moved to Australia in 1989, I lost my radio career because Australian radio would not play, commercial radio would not play someone with an accent that wasn't Australian. So that was the end of my career, as I thought.
Oh, terrible.
And then this wonderful thing called the internet came along, and yeah. I started up a music show, which I'm not a DJ, I'm a newsreader, but then I started up a chat show, which is what you're on here on Bondi Tunes International.
Yeah.
How do you think the music industry and people like yourselves, artists, are affected in a positive way by the internet? I mean, it means you can bypass, you know, Sony, EMI, Warner, the big players. Is it possible? Well, you talked about how tough it is, this business. But some people are making it online, purely online, without using the big boys.
Yeah, they are. There's some people, and it's always as it is. If you're sort of doing stuff that's commercial, then yes, you will do it. It depends on how far, how can I put it, how far you sell your soul and how much you want to do the commercial sort of music. And I think the young people are quite supportive of what's out there of their own age group. Mm. I think the only trouble is the older people are still stuck in about 1975, and they don't really listen to a lot of new music. And when they do, it's very sort of hit and miss now and again. So it's very difficult, especially if somebody, you know, is sort of getting on a bit, to find an audience. But I do find an audience. There's quite a few radio DJs that will play my stuff, and it's all over the world because it's obviously the internet. It's there were a couple of in Australia, a couple in Canada, a lot in the UK. But it's just nice. It's but in terms of sort of the financial reward for it, it's done for fun, really, because
yep.
it's you know, although that, you know, I'm with the DistroKid, which is the cheapest distributor you can go with, but they do play stuff with iTunes, Spotify, and whatever, so that, you know, you don't have to that battle. It's a bit of a battle to get on some of these things.
Do you find it's a reverse thing now that there are young people? Because, you know, I saw a kid, a 10-year-old kid, wearing a Dark Side of the Moon t-shirt the other day, and that I loved that because I love Dark Side of the Moon, I love Pink Floyd. But I guess my question is, do you think there are many young people who are going back to music from the 60s and enjoy that kind of music, and therefore might enjoy music of people of our age group, people in the music industry who are older?
Well I think they would, if they're only actually sort of, there's such a wide platform out there and so many different people out there. There's no one thing. In the UK, as you know, the Top of the Pops used to be on.
Oh, yes.
There was only about three music programs, and that used to sell more or less most of the artists for the big record labels, really. Mike Mansfield's Supersonic and a couple of other programs, following on from Ready Steady Go and stuff like that, the years before.
But, okay, I'm going to...
Yeah.
Keep going.
I think the problem that we've got at the moment is that, yes, the young people really like the stuff, but they're not really prepared to listen to the...
I call it attention span amongst the Y-gens, yes, and the millennials. The attention span is so short because there's so much media around them. You mentioned Top of the Pops. Yes. I mean, really, you know, back in the 70s and 80s and even 90s before Top of the Pops died on the BBC, you know, we had a very limited place to find music. It was either, you know, Dave Lee Travis on Radio 1 or, you know, those kind of people. But I think now you can just music. Look at Spotify. The music is everywhere. Can't blame them in a way, you know.
No. It's a minefield out there. I don't blame them in the slightest because they do dip in and dip out. I mean, that's the nature of the internet, why it's so good. I mean... When I think about it, the only way you got into music is by what a friend had got, because most of this stuff, especially prog rock and early rock, it wasn't on the radio for the most part. Even when we were trying to get airplay early on, other than John Peel, there weren't many people actually looking for underground bands. There was Terry Christian, you remember him from The Weird?
Yes.
Well, he used to do a program called Barb Wireless on Radio Derby. And he used to plug our gigs and play our music. But it was very few and far between. There was another one on Radio Nottingham. He used to have it. And Radio Trent, which is sadly gone now, used to have bands in for a session, and we did a session for them. It was a very limited way of hearing music. Most of the time, other than Radio Luxembourg and Caroline.
Oh, Caroline,
which
yes.
To play. Yes. Yeah, which used to play some of the more, as you call it, underground in those days, and
of course, as we record, of course, you would know that the owner of Caroline died last week. Right now, it's interesting who influenced you. People like Jimi Hendrix, Billy Gibbons. Tonto's expanding headband. I haven't heard of half of these. Roxy Music, I know. Japan, brilliant.
Tonto's expanding headband consisted of two geniuses with a massive early Moog synthesizer who went on to work with Stevie Wonder and actually supposedly co-wrote the Superstition riff, but there's a bit of debate about that. So you'll have heard of the members, but the band that they were in was Tonto's Expanding Headband.
And, of course, we mentioned Pink Floyd, which looks like you're a fan of as well.
Oh, yes. It's of all the periods as well, to be perfectly honest. I think Metal, Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, then obviously that really sums up Pink Floyd, doesn't it? And the fantastic guitar, fantastic music. Fantastic musicianship all round, really, and the fact that Dark Side of the Moon was in the charts for, was it 3 years or something? It's unprecedented.
It's
really.
Crazy, isn't it? Yeah. Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
To mention, you love art. Now, you're obviously an artist in terms of music, but you just mentioned Victoriana and stuff like that, Art Deco. It all really plays into your character, doesn't it? To be very interested in visual art and then audio art, it all sort of plays together.
Well, years ago, I mean, I just went straight from school without any A levels, straight into art college, which you could do in those days because they judged you on your actual portfolio. So if you're any good, you got in, and if you went, you didn't. It's simple as that. And you got an interview, and they decided there and then.
And now you've got to get a degree or something before you go anywhere.
Yeah, but you've got to get all these qualifications to actually get into
to get a degree,
which is a shame, really. But what it did was allow a lot of people who were not 100% academic into an environment where it was a fantastic creative environment. Mm. And if you think of all the bands that came out of art college, you know, Roxy Music, Pink Floyd came out of a different college, but same idea. There were so many that came out of art college in those days. I think a lot of them played more music than they did paint.
Yes, yes. You're also interested in science fiction. Which is it for you, Star Trek or Star Wars?
Both. I like everything, but Star Trek probably.
The original.
I love the early 50s and their very early 60s science fiction books, Asimov and people like that, because at that point in time, it was basically boy meets girl on the planet somewhere, and that's what a lot of the stories were basically about. But you wouldn't think that when you read them, you know. But the plots are very, very sort of basic, very, very sort of like you find in any story anywhere. But some of the predictions they made were fantastic. You know, so many what Asimov said would happen has sort of happened. I think science fiction is good at doing that. You've only got to think of something like 1984 and George Orwell, and you know.
but you know what? Is that really science fiction?
Well,
the George Orwell part.
It becomes science fact, doesn't it? That's a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
You just hope they're wrong sometimes. Yeah. I think that's why the last album I did was basically about dystopia, because I went to Egypt, which I've been hoping to go to for more than 30 years, and a lot of it was really, really looking run down because of the economic decline, because of since the uprising. But having said that, it's now on the up now, whether tourism knocks it back again. But the people lost a lot. I mean, you think we lost a lot in economic declines here, but to them, it was literally food in the mouth.
Yes, of course.
And you don't realise that a country like that can go up and down economically. I mean, they called it the drought years, which is the 10 years that no tourists came in. And people just had to find something to do for a living, you know.
And they couldn't go on the dole, you know.
No. Mm. It's a case of survival. And it sort of influenced to do an album about we're only one step from dystopia. And you've only got to see how society breaks down so fast. And how the police come in and actually sort of take charge in a big way. It's only like a thin veneer society, and you don't realise that until something happens like this virus that really does show what really... We're not far from it, you know what I mean? We're only ticking over, you know, we like to think we're not, but we are.
But do you think that COVID-19, and also known as the coronavirus, do you think that that has made artists more productive? I'm trying to think of the right word for this... has it brought more out in artists, shall we say?
Well, what normally takes me months and months and months, I've managed to do in a couple of weeks because I'm actually I'm at home, which is quite interesting. And I've managed to do DIY, tech the dog and various other things that you don't normally sort of get to do an awful lot of.
And some people have been very artistic about how they do their music. You obviously will be familiar with, 10 million screens on a screen. Zoom, I think it's called. And everyone's singing I don't know how they do this because there's time delays in internet broadcast, but I think they'll record their own pieces and then 20 people appear in front of the screen and then someone puts it all together. Is that how that works?
Yeah, that's literally the gist of it. In fact, speaking of Zoom, they were saying that there's an awful lot of hacks been done on Zoom as well. But when you think that there's that many people involved in it, the criminals are going to try and get a finger in there somewhere, aren't they?
Absolutely. okay, we've got to go soon. I just want to ask you where people can get your music.
iTunes, all on digital downloads. Amazon digital download. Mm-hmm. You can listen to it for free on Spotify. I do a YouTube channel with music, Paul and Music, and I sometimes make little quirky videos, which are sort of sometimes still, sometimes a little bit of very, very crude animation in there. But just other than a blank screen, you know, some of them are, but it's another way of getting music out there to people. Because, I say, it's nice to think that people are actually listening to it, and it's nice to think that they are actually willing to buy it. But for the most part, it's a listening society at the moment. People are more interested in just listening to it for free, especially if it's something new and they don't know. So it's just a case of grin and bear it and just enjoy the fact that people are enjoying your music.
I like your realistic approach to this, but and I also like your music. I have listened to it last week or late last week. But look, we'll play another song at the end of this interview. But thank you so much for joining me, Paul Lim, in the UK.
Thank you very much. It's been an honour.
This is Bondi.
You
don't get a... Did you say good eye? I know, I'm Australian.
No, I didn't know.
Well, that's okay.
My wife said to me, whatever you do, don't say spruce.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to your wife for that. Look, it's so good to talk to you. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Light up my days. I'm turning for home. Finally a chance to say, hey, I love you. Never again to be all alone with you. Light up my life. You give me hope to carry on. You light up my days and fill my nights with song.
This is Bondi Tunes, international broadcasting from Sydney, Australia, where it's pouring rain. We have 95 gusts of winds, which is very unusual in Australia, but I'm crossing to the United Kingdom now, and I'm joined by Carolyn Billingsley, who is an ecologist in Chalford in the UK. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I'm thinking of doing the Camino de Santiago de Compostela, which is a walk from, I believe, France and right down through Spain. It's a spiritual walk. It's a pilgrimage. Can you tell me a little bit about this? Because I know you've done this. And firstly, what you learned about this walk before you did it, and also why you did it.
Well, we didn't do the whole walk, first of all. We just did a section of the walk, which was about 100 kilometres. Mm. I know that it's a very well-known pilgrimage. It's been an important spiritual walk for thousands of years. I decided to do it because I had lost a very close friend. Suddenly she died, and I wanted to try and sort of come to terms with the grief that I was feeling, which was quite overwhelming, and I felt I wanted to have some time to think about her, to walk pretty much on my own, not quite on my own, but to have some space to think really about her life.
Are you a religious person?
Not at all, actually. I'm an atheist, but I would say I'm a spiritual person. I'm not religious.
Yes, and there is a definite difference between both. There's no doubt about that. When your good friend passed away, how long was it between then and you making the decision to do the walk and actually doing the walk?
It was about a year after her death that I did the walk. And it was the previous year, so the same year of her death, that I decided that I would do the walk.
Well, where did you get the idea to do the walk?
My sister wanted to do it. It was her 50th birth year, and she wanted to mark it in some way. Mm. We're very, very close, so we decided we would do it together, and we both had slightly different reasons for doing it. She wanted it to be a sort of milestone in the celebration of her life, and as I, you know, I wanted to do it to remember my friend Lynn.
Do you mind if I ask what age you are?
Yeah, I'm 48, nearly 49.
Ah, you're only a young thing. Right. So you decided to do this walk, there's so many questions I want to ask you. I don't know where to start. When you started doing this walk, you start in France. Tell us about a little bit about the route of this, how it goes.
Well, we actually decided that we didn't want to fly down to France. We started in the south of France. We didn't want to fly down. We wanted to go down by train so that we had this sense of making a journey and we didn't arrive there too quickly and we could experience the travel through England and France before we arrived at the point where we started the walk, which was called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of trouble getting there by train because there were strikes on, so it took us a bit longer than we had anticipated. But when we arrived at Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, we then stayed overnight, and then it's all very organized. So you go and pick up a passport, which they'll stamp for you, so you can get it stamped at each of your Camino stops.
I was going to ask you about the passport thing, which I find fascinating because it's like...
it's lovely.
And so you get a passport at that place that you just mentioned that I can't pronounce. So you get this passport and it gets stamped I'm guessing, southern France before you enter Spain.
Yeah.
You said that you did 100K, 100 miles or 100 kilometers.
Kilometers.
100 kilometers. It really is quite long, this. Do you know how long the actual length of this thing is?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's okay. I'm guessing it's a hell of a lot longer than 100 Ks.
All along the north of Spain, all the way to the sea. So it's long. It's long.
I'm going to ask you who you met during this journey. I know you're with your sister, is that right?
Not just my sister, actually. I went with my sister and three other friends, female friends.
Right. Now, can I ask you, given that you're in your mid to late 40s, were there many young people doing this, or was it mostly people your own age group or older people?
It was really, really mixed. Mm. Really mixed. Lots of young people, lots of older people. We met people in their 60s, late 60s doing it. Mm. A real mixture of age groups, really. I mean, it's become very, very popular with American tourists since the film The Way.
I was going to ask you about The Way, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So there were a lot of American tourists, and the age was pretty much mixed, and the level of fitness too was very varied.
Well, you know, I'm thinking of actually doing this with my partner, There's a couple of things that concern me here, okay, Carolyn?
Yep.
The heat. What time of the year did you go?
We went in June.
Right, so that's summer.
Yep.
Is there humidity? Does it get hot?
It's not hot at the beginning of the walk where we started in France. The first section of the walk is through the Pyrenees, so that's quite cool. As you progress into Spain, obviously it gets hotter and hotter, and with the last stages of the stretch that we did, it was getting really hot. And you need to make sure that you take plenty of water, but there are points where you can fill up with water en route. It does get hot. You do need to take sort of some protection.
Is it like, I've got a big problem with heat because I live in Sydney in Australia, and it is a very, very humid city, and we have heat up to 8 months of the year. I've got no problem with heat and dry heat, but a humid heat, oh my God. Would you say it's humid?
Dry heat.
No,
it's dry heat.
Oh, well, thank God for that. tell me, do you you know, you're talking about the film The Way, which I watched three times. I absolutely love this film, beautifully crafted. I wonder about the reality of the people, and I wanted to ask you, did you meet a lot of people while you were doing this walk? Or
I mean, it's impossible not to meet people, and it's fascinating some of the reasons why people are embarking on the walk. We met a woman whose son had died in it was her husband, I think, in a hit and run accident in America.
Gosh,
and she was grieving. And then we met another woman who was, I hope it's okay to say, but who was in her 60s, I think, and had just let her friends know that she was gay. And she was kind of you know, that was related to the reasons why he was doing the walk. So there were really poignant reasons why people were embarking on it, as well as really ordinary reasons.
I was going to ask, because obviously, you know, you get the impression it's all people who are grieving and or people who've got cancer, or, you know, people with these emotional problems. But there's a lot of people doing it for the fun of it as well. Sure.
Just for the fun of it and for the challenge of it. I mean, we met. It was lovely, actually. We met a woman and her son who were doing it together. He was doing it for his 30th birthday sort of treat, and she was doing it for her 50th birthday treat, and they were doing it together. So you get people doing it for very
positive,
joyous reasons as well. Very positive stuff. But a lot of people who are doing it because they've been through horrendous things, and they're sort of having an opportunity to sort of contemplate and
I intend to. I do. You know, if I do this, I'm not sure if I can do this year. But if I do this, I will be interviewing a lot of people and for the radio show. And I imagine there will be some pretty interesting stories in there. When you're doing this, how many kilometers a day were you covering?
It varied a little bit. The first stretch through the Pyrenees was quite long. I think it was 27 kilometres, because there's no way to stop. You go from Saint-Jean Pied-de-Port, and then you come to, I think it's Rouen-Civale, where we stayed in the monastery, but there's no way to stop in between.
Did you say that was the longest? 27 kilometres.
27.
Oh my goodness, so you did that in one day, and that's a lot of... I'm getting the impression that it's a lot of walking upwards as against downwards.
The first bit, there's a lot of walking upwards through the Pyrenees, obviously, it's uphill. But it's not... the thing that I found interesting was that we tried to train for it, but we all have families and full-time jobs and commitments and stuff, so we probably didn't train as much as they recommended in the books that we read. But we were all pretty much absolutely fine, and actually the friends who live around where I live, we were particularly okay, because it's very steep around here and we walk a lot anyway, so it was fine. It was perfectly... I found it fine, the walk through the Pyrenees. It was less arduous than some of the walks I've done locally, actually, to be honest. I don't know whether all of my group would say the same thing. I think we varied in our sort of...
How
hard you found it?
I sometimes think it's easier to walk upwards than downwards. I find climbing hills easier going walking upwards.
Of course, you've got to come down the Pyrenees as well.
Yes, I know. You've got to pay the price, don't you, one way or the other. So 27 Ks in one day. You didn't seem to find it tough. Do you bring food with you on these walks? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. You obviously do. And how big is your backpack? And how heavy is your backpack?
Well, actually, we cheated a little bit because, well, not cheated, but a lot of people carry a backpack all the way. And they recommend that you don't carry more than 10 kilograms on your back.
Yeah.
And actually, we decided from day one that to get the most pleasure out of this walk, it wasn't supposed to be really grueling. It wasn't a kind of test of our endurance or fitness. So we wanted to enjoy it. So actually, we paid to have our backpacks taken from one stock to the next.
Oh, really?
And that for us was... that was absolutely perfect. I mean, it doesn't cost very much, and the taxi takes it from the hostel that you stay in to the next hostel that you stay in.
That's brilliant.
And it meant that we enjoyed it more then. And I think without that, I think we could have done it, but it would have been more of an endurance test, and that wasn't what we were... That wasn't our intention.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I'm definitely going to do that. Sounds great.
It's brilliant. I mean, some people that we met a wonderful woman who was well in her 60s who was carrying, I think it was probably 15 kilograms in her backpack every day. There's a lot of people do it, but a lot of people don't do it as well. I mean, we were walking much less towards the end of our long walk anyway. We were doing sort of 14 kilometers a day, and then the last day, I think we only did 10. So we were just taking it. We were doing it how we wanted to do it.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
If you've just joined us, this is Bondi Tunes International. I'm talking with Carolyn Billingsley, an ecologist in Chelford in the UK, who has done the Camino de Santiago de Compostela walk from southern France into Spain. We were talking about hotels. What about hotels? Is it very commercial?
Actually, it's very busy. It is commercial. I'm not sure I'd necessarily call it commercial, but it's not the kind of walk you would choose to do if you want solitude. There are big groups of people and a lot of people continuously along the route. You could never get lost because you would just look ahead of you and see a group of you. So it isn't the people who are looking for solitude, I don't think. It was very busy. Maybe if you did it out of season, it would be less busy. But you stay in these little, what are they called, pensions? You stay in hostels.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic, because what you get is a bed in a dormitory, and you get a pilgrim's meal, and it's quite cheap, and it's normally the food's just very simple but nice, and they're always clean. The thing I found is that they're very noisy. Because you've got a lot of people in the dormitory. I mean, I think one of the dormitories is probably about 200 people.
Holy moly.
Getting up very early. Yeah, in the monastery.
Can you get places... Sorry, I'll talk about the monastery in a minute. Can you get places where you just have your own room? Or?
It doesn't really work like that. The rooms vary in size, but you're talking bunk beds in small dorms. Or bunk beds in large dormitories. That's just how it's set out on route.
Just wondering. Okay.
There's a lot of noise in the morning, you know, people getting up and rustling around. And
you know, Carolyn, I'm just going back to my teenage years when traveling in Amsterdam and around Europe and having to share a dorm with 20 other people. Doesn't please me greatly. I just want to get back... for a minute to commercialism of this. You know, I can't help getting the feeling that there's an awful lot of money involved in this. When you're doing this walk, do you find that you're approached by people in any way to sell you stuff, like your next dormitory, for instance, on the way to a certain town?
No, not at all. And you've normally booked your room in the place that you're staying before you leave that day. So you know exactly where you're walking. They've got your booking, and you have. There's nobody trying to sell you religious trinkets en route or anything either.
Okay.
It's not like that. I wouldn't say it was commercial. It's very busy.
Yes.
There's a lot of people doing it. But I wouldn't. Commercial isn't something that sprung to mind when we did it. People are lovely as well. Everyone is really friendly and.
Of course, everyone's doing this for much the same reason anyway, or variable reasons, but in the same sort of game plan. When you're booking places, do you use the internet when you're doing this? Are you on your smartphone booking places?
We used the phone actually to places that we just arrived somewhere and there was a room where we could stay. That was fine too. I think again that would depend perhaps when you did it, how busy the season was.
Yeah.
But we always found a room, no problem at all. If I was going to do it again, I probably will do a bit more of it again. I struggled with staying in the dormitories because they're so noisy, it's hard to sleep. And as you get more and more tired as the walk progresses, it becomes harder and harder to keep going because you're not sleeping very well as well. So I think a nice way to do it would just camp or something on route.
Yeah. Carolyn, the reason I asked you about the possibility of having your own rooms because it's that very thing. I mean, I find it hard enough to sleep as it is, damn it. But I would find that very difficult indeed. And as you say,
I think that would be challenging.
Mm. Okay, now we've got to end this. I just want to ask you, you mentioned at the start of this interview that you lost, I think, your best friend, would you say, your best friend?
Yeah, very close friend.
And it wasn't for a year that you did this trip, the Camino de Santiago walk. After this event, do you think this helped you in terms of your loss?
Actually, enormously, yes, because one of the things that was very profound for me was walking over the Pyrenees and watching the griffin vultures flying overhead and having this sense of my friend's spirit being there in these, incorporated in these birds. And for me, I mean, it was just a way of picturing her, I think. But it was very peaceful, and it definitely helped me to sort of come to terms with the fact that she was gone and I needed to sort of try and, carry on my life and enjoy my life without her in it anymore.
Yeah.
So, yes, it did help. It helped enormously. And just to be surrounded by nature, both of us were very, as an ecologist, I'm obviously very interested in the natural world, and so was my friend. Mm. So to be surrounded by nature, the butterflies, we saw some beautiful butterflies and the flowers that were out. It was a very peaceful the walk through the mountains particularly was very, very peaceful.
Yeah.
And it gave me time to sort of think,
And we do need that time after someone so close dies. Carolyn Billingsley, thank you so much for talking to us on Bondi Tunes International.
You're welcome, my pleasure.
Some years ago, I walked 150 miles of an ancient pilgrimage in Spain known as El Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James. It was while walking the Camino that I first heard the voices of Jamilet, Señor Peregrino, Rosa, and the other characters of the Peregrine trilogy. Like me, they didn't really know why they were on this journey or what they were looking for. But the further we got from the world we knew, the more clearly we saw ourselves and each other. Soon, we began to understand that the journey wouldn't only change our lives, it would transform us completely. My literary companions told me things about myself that weren't always easy to hear, but they also inspired me to stay true to my own creative journey, and they kept me going when I felt like stopping or giving up altogether. Sometimes, when the only sound I heard for mile after mile was the wind in the trees and my boots on the path, they even sang to me.
Santiago de Compostela, this pilgrim's path we trod, we receive the rain as blessing, the sun as praise from God. No longer do we count the miles to reach this field of stars. Journey is its own reward, and worship fills the hours. Santiago, 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 pray for me as I walk upon your Camino, searching for my destiny. Santiago de Compostela, the pilgrim saint endows a staff to guide my wandering, a hat to shade my brow. I ask that when you see me fall down on bended knee, if miracles grow like flowers, save a small bloom for me. Santiago, 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 pray for me as I walk upon your Camino, searching for my destiny. Santiago, 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 pray for me as I walk upon your Camino, searching for my destiny.
this year I plan to walk the Camino again. Of course, I realize now that the journey never really ends. Every moment of every day, we're all a little bit further down the road. And the best we can do is to walk at our own pace and be grateful for the opportunities we have to share the journey with each other. Whenever pilgrims on the Camino part ways, be it for a few hours or forever, they often say, "Buen camino." The literal translation is "good walk" or "have a good walk," but it really means, "I wish you a wonderful life." Buen camino.
It's harmony time.
The Temptations is an American vocal group, achieving fame as one of the most successful acts to record for Motown Records. The group's repertoire has included, at various times during its five-decade career, R&B, doo-wop, funk, disco, soul, and adult contemporary music. Formed in Detroit, Michigan in 1960 as the Elgins, the Temptations have always featured at least five male vocalist dancers. Known for its recognizable choreography, distinct harmonies, and flashy onstage suits, the Temptations have been said to be as influential to soul as the Beatles are to pop and rock. Having sold tens of millions of albums, the Temptations are one of the most successful groups in music history. Like its sister female group, the Supremes, the Temptations lineup changed frequently over the years. As of 2010, the Temptations were continuing to perform and record for Universal Records, with its one living original, Otis Williams, still in the lineup. Over the course of their career, the Temptations released four Billboard Hot 100 number one singles and 14 Billboard R&B number one singles. Three classic Temptation songs, My Girl, Ain't Too Proud to Beg, and Papa Was a Rolling Stone, are among the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll.
Yeah. always up before the dawn. And I really have enjoyed my stay, but I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne, I'm an early morning lover, and I must be moving on. Believe in what you say is the undisputed truth, but I have to have things my own way to keep me in my youth. Like a ship without an anchor, like a slave without a chain, just a thought of those sweet ladies as they shiver through my veins. And I will go on shining, shining like brand new. I'll never look behind me, my troubles will be few.
Goodbye, stranger. It's been The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.